ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley from ABC News Daily, the podcast that brings you one big story affecting your world each weekday in just 15 minutes.
Like many small business owners, we are literally just buying ourselves a job. It would be better if the government just got a little bit out of our way and just let us do what we need to do.
Join me for ABC News Daily. Find us on ABC Listen.
Artificial intelligence could radically reshape our economy, making some people more efficient, helping to achieve leaps in knowledge, and potentially some jobs obsolete. A group of experts, including researchers and others working in the field, are meeting today to thrash out whether Australia has the right settings in place to ensure AI serves humanity and doesn't destroy it. So what threat does a model like Mythos really pose, and will AI take all our jobs? Welcome to ABC Business Daily. I'm Carrington Clark.
And I'm Cam Wilson, the ABC's National AI Technology Reporter. And I'm right now with about 300 other people concerned about where AI is taking us at the AI Safety 2026 Forum here in Sydney.
Cam, thank you so much for taking the time out on a very busy day. I know you've been working hard listening to all these experts in their field talk about AI safety, but I did want to start by talking about this Telstra outage. We've had what appears to be a major outage on the Telstra network, although there is some downplaying of potentially how many people are affected. We will get more breaking news on this, I'm sure, as the day rolls on. Important to timestamp this conversation. It's happening just after midday. You've been, though, focused on the AI Safety Forum. But it is very obvious from what's happened today, once again, how crucial telecommunications is to everyone's day-to-day life and how any breakdown in that telecommunications infrastructure can have catastrophic impacts on all of us. Now, at the moment, it looks like this is perhaps just some error in the tech side. This doesn't seem to be a malicious act. We don't have anything to suggest that this is artificial intelligence linked, but we keep hearing warnings, particularly when it comes to, say, Mythos 5 or Fable 5, about AI's ability to find flaws or holes in cybersecurity and potentially be used to bring down infrastructure. I mean, what comes to your mind when we look at the vulnerability of the telecommunications industry and the telecommunications infrastructure here in Australia?
I'm a Telstra customer. I was catching the bus into this AI Safety Forum today, where they're talking about all the potential risks that sound like they're a long way away, things about AI out of control, synthetic, bioweapons made by AI, all these things that sound like they are science fiction movie plots. I was inconvenienced. I know that's a small thing and, I take this very, very seriously. But the thing that I was just thinking about, and this is really what dovetails with this conference here, is that, we're now all so dependent on often quite a small number of providers of this kind of critical infrastructure. It was inconvenient for me, a mild inconvenience that I couldn't do, check my work email on the way to work. It's much more serious, for all the people who depend on this stuff, transport, other infrastructure, hospitals, those kinds of things. It's a funny kind of flip side of technology, right? Where we've just made all these things possible. We feel like we can do more things than ever. It gives us this flexibility, just only not so long ago, I remember being like, I'd be like walking around trying to get to the top of a hill to try and get a little bit of internet on my phone to check something. And now, it's abundant everywhere. But the flip side is now we have these massive providers, whether it's just a few telcos or it's these major technology companies that we all rely on. And that's the kind of stuff that is coming up here at this conference, as these are the things that could become targets, whether of malicious action or whether by, even just by accident, that we do kind of have this kind of, we are kind of vulnerable to this. So, I think this happening today very much made me feel like, imagine if this kind of stuff was happening, but we actually had, people using high-tech weapons that could take on these challenges, that could, create these problems more often. It's quite a daunting idea.
Yeah, I remember having conversations five, 6 years ago when there was kind of there was a lot of evidence of people using less and less cash in the economy and having conversation with friends about, well, maybe we do just get rid of cash completely because most people who are now kind of using it potentially are using it for either criminal means or they're using it to dodge tax or whatever. Do we really even need it? And I have in recent times completely changed my mind on this issue. I built up my own little pile of cash at home just in case there is a time when telecommunications goes out and you don't have that option. I was also struck by...
What's your address, Carrington, by the way?
That's right. Yeah, exactly. It's a very small pile, very, very small and very well...
This is a general salary we're talking about.
Exactly. And I was also struck when I was last traveling and my phone just overheated because it was a really hot day and probably overusing it or whatever. And I couldn't turn it back on. And I realized that I had no contact phone numbers memorized anymore. I had no, cash on me. I did have cards, thankfully. It's not all completely reliant on my phone. But being without other information, I didn't know exactly where I was staying. We are so reliant. Most people have built no redundancy into their life. If their smartphone is out of action, then they are kind of at a loss on how to just even navigate their day-to-day. And so I think that is a concern, and I think you're right. It dovetails with this kind of broader conversation. The advance of technology has built great efficiency into our lives, and it's obviously allowed us to do things that we wouldn't have previously been able to do. Taking travel as an example, you have access to maps and access to being able to book different types of rides instead of just relying on the local taxi network, which can be hard to navigate. These are amazing things, currency conversions, finding places you want to be, but we are so reliant on them. And again, we don't know the full details of exactly what's happened today, but it was obvious when the reports of people being impacted by this outage, how entrenched it is with lots of different aspects of our lives. Obviously, the most immediate is people's ability to make calls, to access the internet on smart devices, but there are impacts on the financial system as well. And obviously there were impacts in Victoria in the travel system because of, we think the way the train network was relying on Telstra. So it does raise that question. And this is, I think, what is so concerning to people when it comes to artificial intelligence, particularly Mythos, was the idea that if someone, as you said, sometimes maybe even by accident, someone was just misusing it and accidentally could cause something catastrophic like taking out telecommunications networks, or a malicious actor could target telecommunications infrastructure or power infrastructure, a whole bunch of things that are so heavily reliant. So what are the messages you're receiving? How is Australia placed when it comes to artificial intelligence and the risk to the way that we live?
Do you know, it's really interesting being here. So this is a conference that has been run now, I think, a few times. Last time was in 2024, and they told me there was about 100 attendees, but now there's more than 300.
Growing industry at this moment. It might be about to kill other jobs, but I think there's a growing industry of people in safety and AI, right?
Yeah, that's right. Hey, and look, for all the talk about jobs, I can tell you it's created at least one job, which is mine. So thank you at least for that. There is this, obviously heaps of interested in it at the moment. And I came to this because I'm trying to understand, what is going on in the experts, the people who are working in this, who are paying attention to it closely. And maybe in a bit we'll talk about how interesting that conversation is. But one thing that I found really fascinating is that, so yesterday there was, Australia has a new AI Safety Institute. It's this new government body that's been set up to essentially mostly advise government, be the nerds, do the technical testing of this AI and as it's emerging risks, and then tell other government departments how to deal with it. And its head, Kate Conroy, kind of made, I think, pretty much her first public appearance, and she was here. And one thing she did during this speech was she said, actually, why don't we do something? Why don't we find out what everyone in the audience thinks is the top risk from AI at the moment? And she did a kind of, everyone can kind of vote on their phones. And the thing that came out, despite the fact that this is this group of people who are, super into this stuff, some of them feel like there's a serious risk in just a few years of, really end of days, catastrophic, apocalyptic kind of outcomes. The thing that they identified is actually, based on other research I've seen, the same fear that I think the general public has in Australia, which is centralization of power is the kind of top of mind at the moment, because, you know, there are a few AI companies mostly who have these tools and they are relying, you know, these companies in particular, like anyone who's paid attention to the kind of the actual, you know, business structures and that kind of controlled by a few people. So you've got a handful of people, mostly Americans in another country, who have this incredibly powerful, useful, but also, you know, feared technology. And, you know, they're always talking that up as well. It seems like everyone, no matter how much of an expert you are or someone who's not, you know, who just is kind of like, you know, just like anyone else is paying attention to stuff when it comes up, actually is kind of honed in on the same thing, which is they're like, gee, this has the potential to give a lot of power to just a few people. And, you know, that tends to be a worry, whether like, you know, whether with this Telstra thing, whether something accidentally happens, you know, whether, for example, you know, I did some reporting on Starlink, the Elon Musk satellite broadband provider. You know, even one of the risks identified by the Australian government of that is like, you know, even if you think that Elon Musk is doing everything perfectly, even if he just decides he doesn't want to, you know, do the kind of maintenance to keep the infrastructure up to date, you know, these are all the kind of risks, you know, the key man risk around so much of the global economy, now increasingly so much the way that work is done, that kind of stuff, all dependent on just a few. It's kind of a universal worry.
Yeah, and I think that the Elon Musk Starlink example is absolutely relevant, right? You've got, you know, a product that a lot of people get great value from, which is why a lot of people have signed up to it. And a lot of people in Australia have benefited from being able to access Starlink. It's given them faster speeds. It's given them better reliability in many cases. That means that they perhaps have been able to do jobs that they weren't able to do previously. They might be paying less money for it, whatever it might be. But what he has shown is he can decide to switch it off or switch it on his own whim. And this is a man who's been very happy to push his own political messages on different issues. And what we've seen, for example, in Iran is that he ignored the will of the Iranian government. Now, a lot of people are obviously very critical of the Iranian regime and the way that it treats its population. But the fact that this unelected man, I mean, the Iranian regime is also unelected, but Elon Musk does not represent a country. He represents himself and his shareholders, probably himself more than anything else. And he was the one to decide whether or not this type of telecommunications infrastructure, this internet access, was available or not to a population. And, you know, that does raise real questions, doesn't it, with a situation like Australia. And we have seen here our telecommunications industry doing partnerships with these different leaders in artificial intelligence. Do you think the concern when it's about power concentrating in the hands of a few individuals, is it about controlling what the AI tells people when we think about, you know, large language models like ChatGPT, for example, Claude? Is it the idea that they will control what truth is, in inverted comma? Is it their ability to potentially do harm or to cut people off? What do you think the concentration, or is it just a general concern about no one person should have too much power because that's just a bad outcome for other people because they're hard to police or whatever it might be?
I think it's all of the above. But, you know, the other thing to mention with this conference, which is very much about being like, from people, and, you know, this is generally the people who've come here tend to be fairly big believers in the capacity of it. And so there's this kind of dual thing where they're saying, I think AI is powerful now. I think it's only going to get way more powerful in the future. But there's also just the fact that, like, you know, something that it can do the right thing really well could probably also do the wrong thing really well. And a lot of the kind of concern is like, you know, there's a lot of reason to think that that the safety of it all, you know, the things that you stop, you know, they talk about things like from people using AI to do malicious things, from AI itself deciding itself or acting in a way to do something malicious outside of the instructions of someone, or the kind of systemic risk, you know, what happens when everyone has these technology that can do this thing, how does it change things? You know, probably an easy to understand example of that is, you know, AI generated photos and videos, now that anyone can make stuff that, you know, makes it very hard to believe anything you see. Well, God, there's like a systemic impact of all of that.
So if power is going to be concentrated in the hands of a few, it's pretty likely they're not going to be Australians. As you say, the big players, mostly the ones that we're interacting with are Americans. We have seen tests of kind of the power of these big organizations, particularly in conflict with the Trump administration. Donald Trump's administration famously kind of going to war with Anthropic about Anthropic's products being used potentially for war, but also it curtailing Anthropic's release of its Fable 5 product and was concerned about Mythos 5. At the moment, it appears that these companies are at least beholden to the Trump administration, to the American government. But how vulnerable is Australia because we don't have tech companies? And does Australia have the ability to tell, for example, an Anthropic what to do? Or do we just have to accept the fact that we aren't going to be able to regulate this? Or do we need to be partnering, for example, with the European Union or with other parties in order to kind of, you know, form an alliance when it comes to regulation of AI companies?
There is a lot of discussion about that here at this conference because, you know, there is an acceptance that we are kind of at best a middle power. And when it comes to AI, we don't have any of these top labs that are doing the, you know, that have this technology that's the most advanced. There is talk about, you know, what can we do in terms of ganging up with other countries to kind of, you know, set rules like that. But the other thing that is really hanging over this forum, often not explicitly, but very much in the mind, is this idea about the major AI frontier labs, you know, your OpenAIs, your Anthropics, as well, you know, Google, I guess XAI, Elon Musk's one as well, whether we are going to seek them to set up major base camp in Australia, and around this discussion about these data centers that are being built, and what actually fundamentally really seems to revolve around this question of copyright, because, you know, I've kind of reported this out that one of the essentially like the major hurdle at the moment for, in particular, this company Anthropic, which is at the moment the world's most valuable AI company. It has people would probably know its product Claude, and you mentioned some of the models before. There's ones that have, you know, prompted the US administration to say, "Whoa, there, like you can't roll it out to everyone. That's too powerful." It is really, really seriously looking at Australia as one of its major places to be. As a result, that means, you know, building a lot of data centers here so it can not just kind of serve up the AI, but to kind of train it as well. And that distinction is kind of like, I kind of think like the difference between, a place where you're kind of cooking a soup versus kind of ladling it out. Like the big pot where they cook the soup, they're like saying, we would love to do it in Australia because for a variety of reasons that Australia is attractive, but also for the big reason that at the moment they are very beholden to the US at the moment because most of their stuff is there. So the flip side is thinking about Australia, thinking about our regulation, all the stuff that we're doing, we have this question like, do we want these companies here? Do we want them to set up a major physical presence here? Because we don't, like we said, we don't have these major, you know, there is no, Oz AI, there's no major AI company here. But there is actually just a, like, for all the talk of like, you know, models, tokens, chips, all these kinds of things, at the end of the day, if you have buildings somewhere that need, you know, more or less a kind of a, you know, a PowerPoint, physically being present in Australia is broadly kind of accepted as something that makes it easier for them to regulate, whether it's to literally say, you know, you are here to kind of get concessions out of them with this whole copyright debate at the moment, or just to do broader regulation where you say, you know, we expect in this country, when you're serving Australians, you should be acting these ways. We want you to do these things, even if it's not necessarily exactly one thing leads to the other. If they have a bigger presence here, if they are more kind of under the kind of, jurisdiction essentially of Australia, it gives Australia that leverage. But of course, the flip side is we have this very tough decision, and that is apparently or increasingly, you know, hearing that may be made soon around, we have to deal with the fact that, you know, these AI companies have trained on the data of Australians without permission, without paying copyright. And as a result, like, you know, they are apparently saying, we want to set up here, we want to make you one of the base camps, but we need that sorted out. Big decision being made over that. It is also like intertwined together. And it's funny that it's coming down to copyright, but really it's not just about like creatives, how much we are paying, you know, how much intellectual property is worth, but also all these other things as well, like national security, cultural expectations about like online safety and how we expect these products to work. It's all really it's all kind of happening at the moment. And at this conference here, they are saying like, you know, if we want to do something about this, you know, AI doesn't stop at the border. We can't just stop it from coming here, you know, no matter what. But like kind of counterintuitively, if we can lure some of these companies to set up a bigger presence here, that actually gives Australia more influence over, you know, these companies, which increasingly are kind of as big, as powerful as other countries as well.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I feel like in previous kind of decades, the race to attract technology companies a lot of the time came down to taxation arrangements, inducements. This time around, it seems to be about, can you change your laws around copyright? Are you able to help the approval process be sped up? And when it comes to building, for example, data centers, how do we get access to the electricity, the water that we need? Those seem to be interesting characteristics, but I think that's also partly because we've kind of now accepted that you probably don't get a lot of tax if you host a lot of these technology companies. They seem to have they seem pretty good at making sure that most of the revenue is booked in the lowest possible taxation jurisdiction. But I mean, that is interesting that people think perhaps if we are hosting, you have more leverage. I'm not sure if that's just wishful thinking when it comes down to it, but I think people would rather have those type of facilities in Australia than Australians using facilities elsewhere. And obviously there are concerns about wherever that data is being processed potentially. What is the take within the conference when it comes to what this is probably going to mean to the labour market? Because on one hand, yes, people are saying it's going to lead to greater productivity, and you can see obviously how that could very quickly happen if it's allowing you to do a lot of menial kind of repetitive tasks super fast and taking that burden off humans doing them themselves. But there are also concerns, obviously, that this could lead to major layoffs. You know, I've had many people tell me anecdotally that large companies have stopped hiring as many grads, or they're finding it difficult to get grads to do the work that grads previously did because a lot of it was kind of repetitive. And that is stuff that AI is taking over. Is there an optimistic or a pessimistic take? And I think a lot of the time at the moment when we hear about tech companies laying off people, it's usually AI is part of the explanation for that. I've heard some skeptics say that's a really easy answer for a lot of these companies, where maybe sometimes it's not actually about artificial intelligence. But is there a feeling in the room about whether or not overall this is going to mean major displacement, or is it going to be a good thing for the jobs market?
I want to thank you first, Carrington, for giving me a perfect softball that I don't even know that you gave me, which is that today I reported on the federal government's first big analysis of the job market and how it's being impacted by AI. And what they found, this top-level finding, was actually that there is no current major job displacement by AI. They took, you know, very bird's eye view. They weren't, you know, looking at individual layoffs that we've kind of heard reported about, but just saying, looking at the labor data, statistical analysis, they said job market's looking strong, hasn't drastically changed. And they did see some early warning signs in some AI exposed careers. So things like telemarketers, now, you know, AI can kind of, you know, kind of generate a voice to call people and annoy them, or transcription stuff. Obviously, that can be very much done by machines now. They are starting to see some weakening in the job growth there that suggests it's happening. The take at the conference here today is very much that, like, kind of maximalist, that, like, they think that that is going to happen in a big way. They think that you know, there is a lot of discussion about, you know, mass job displacement. What does that mean? How does that affect, obviously, everything from the economics of how an economy to, like, you know, social cohesion to, you know, how we all just, like, work and live our lives. I guess the kind of social and cultural aspect as well. There's talk of, like, you know, the universal basic income. People probably have heard that concept now, the idea that maybe we should just pay everyone a little bit because we can't now assume that everyone can get a job. I think it is, you know, it's big on the minor. In fact, actually, do you know, there was yesterday we heard from Helen Toner, who is a bit of a superstar in the kind of AI world, but not super well-known outside of it. She's an Australian who was actually at the center of one of the biggest events that happened in the AI industry in the last few years. She was on the board of OpenAI, the makers of ChatGPT, that kind of kicked all this off. And there was a schism. There was a moment in 2023 where the board of OpenAI actually kicked off
Sam Altman
briefly, saying that essentially not much detail, but suggesting that he had been deceptive towards them. He ended up kind of rallying the company or the employees and got kind of reinstated back in place. And now he's very much, you know, at the forefront of all this and is one of the biggest names in AI still. And Helen was no longer on the board after that. You know, that kind of convinced enough of the board to kind of bring him back and then change the board. But she has remained a very influential voice in AI stuff. And she was talking, she's in DC, but she hears in Silicon Valley, you know, people who work in the AI companies, you know, the people who are on the tools designing these things are quitting their jobs because they're saying, I think it's really, really soon to the point where this technology does this for itself. You don't need me. I don't actually see much point in continuing to do this, so I better go start doing something else. So, look, you know, the thing I'll just, like, underscore is, like, this, like, AI safety community is actually a very, like, there's a rich cultural history over it. Have been philosophers, people interested in this, technologists who've been thinking about this for decades and decades, obviously very in vogue now because very practical. But, you know, like, they come from this very, like, they like to, you know, frame as very, like, rational point of view and saying, you know, even if we think that there's a small chance of this risk, but the effect of that risk is so large, you know, like, if there's a 1% chance of Skynet, but Skynet would kill everyone, that'd be pretty bad. We have to think about it pretty seriously. So you get this, like, very, you know, framed in this very cool, logical way, but, like, these potential outcomes that are... so kind of hard to comprehend that it is really jarring. And so I think that it's a funny thing being here as someone who is, you know, obviously very interested in reporting on it and really trying to think about how can I, the ABC, we're trying to reach everyone we can. How can I convince, you know, everyone, no matter like how interested they are in this inherently, who has much familiarity with it, how can I tell them the stuff that they need to know and help them understand it? It's kind of like a big challenge because like, the stuff is moving very fast. The people are talking about these extreme scenarios. And, you know, they're not like necessarily being hysterical. They're saying, I don't think there's necessarily a massive chance, but if it does happen, it's really bad. There is such a gap between the people here and the things that are obsessing them at the moment and the responses that they suggest to have and the rest of the public. The question is, where is it all going to end up? Who's going to be right? Like, you know, will that those predictions of doom and gloom end up being correct? And you know, also, you know, thinking about the people who have to make these decisions, you know, politicians at the top level, but like, you know, kids who are like, what should I study at school? It's this very thorny problem to think about because you're like, how do you live your life? How do we govern a country?
Yeah.
Thinking about things that have a very small percent chance of happening but have such a big impact.
A few years ago, so everyone get your kid into coding. That's the future. And now
exactly. AI has plenty of weight off journalists got told that.
Yeah. And instead, it seems that AI is particularly good at coding. So maybe that was terrible advice. Cam, it's been fascinating having you on. Thank you so much for taking time out. And let's have you on the podcast again soon.
I'd love to. Thank you so much.
That is it for this episode of ABC Business Daily. We'll be back with another episode tomorrow. Make sure you're following us on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you'd like to send in a question about artificial intelligence, about the war in the Middle East, whatever's got you fascinated at the moment, email abcbusinessdaily@abc.net.au. Catch you next time, Cam.
Thanks.